Hi, everyone. This is Scott Callon. Thank you very much for joining. I'm being joined today by Tetsuya Ted Fujita, who is our lead independent director, and Dan Morisaku in our finance department. I'm working off of the fiscal 18-2, so this is the 2018 February fiscal year, full year corporate presentation that we have put on our website. So let's begin. Thank you very much for joining. So turning to page 6, there's a summary of some of the things that we think were important that we did this year. I will be going through the details as we go further, so I'm not going to spend all the time on this page. We do think the earnings model is robust. As you can see, we have structural profitability, which means that we have stock earnings, meaning those are contractually embedded earnings, and I'll touch on them later, like rental contracts and asset management contracts, which are well above our fixed expenses. We've had some core business growth. We've had some new business entry. We've done buybacks, and we've upped the dividend for the sixth consecutive year. Turning to page 7, operating profit was down 4%. Net income was down 6%. ROE was 16.5%. As you know, we manage ourselves to deliver a 15% or above ROE. This year was always going to be a tough year for the year-on-year comps. We came in above our forecast for OP, for RP, recurring profit, for net income, EPS, and ROE. We continue to generate very high levels of gross profits and operating profit or gross profit margin of 45% or OPM operating profit margin of 36%. This is a business that we think is a very productive business, and we're very much on track. Turning to page 8 to see the segment earnings details. You can see that, this is on a gross profit basis for each of the segments. You can see that asset management was down 17% year-on-year. We were expecting a fallout, which should occur, of some activities relative to the REITs that are on a one-off basis. We came in at 99% of our full-year forecast. In other words, we came in at our forecast. Value add was up 10%, 9.5% year-on-year. That also came in at forecast of 99%. We don't quibble about plus or minus 1 or 2%. And most importantly, in terms of helping to continue to drive above forecast results, we brought Ichigo Shoromoda, which is the largest solar power plant in the Tokyo region, online early, and that ended up generating 120% of what we expected, in other words, plus 21% against the full-year forecast. Gross profit in clean energy was down substantially. That was, again, as expected. We did the public offering last year that for Ichigo Green that had lots of gains on it, in terms of gains on sales, and that was not to be repeated this year. Turning to page 9, we did 2 share buybacks, one at an average price of 324 yen, another at an average price of 394 yen. The stock is currently at about 460. We thought it was good value to buy back the shares. I think we all understand that ultimately the driver of value for shareholders is earnings, and because shareholders don't own the entire company, we should be focused on earnings per share. There are only 2 ways to grow earnings per share. You either increase total earnings or you decrease your share count. We think we're able to invest well to grow future earnings this year, and the business is so cash generative. We also thought it was a good thing to do to buy back shares, we think, at accretive levels for our shareholders. Page 10 shows both our dividend policy, which is designed to create growth, certainty, and stability. We have a DOE payout policy right now, so the dividend moves with much less volatility than the earnings the payout policy, which can move around from year to year. We also have a progressive dividend policy. We firmly believe that this company will continue to generate substantial earnings growth. The progressive dividend policy says that our policy is to raise or at a minimum keep our dividend flat on a year-on-year basis. So we've been at 6 consecutive years of dividend growth. By the way, you should not be investing in Ichigo Inc. if you think on the basis of our dividend, this is not a mature company. This is a growth company. We think we're going to grow our earnings substantially. We think it is our job to do so. But we, as part of that growth, we're fully capable of continuing to raise our dividend year after year, and it is our full intent to continue to do so. Let me turn to section two. We think the value-add business model and value-add is at the heart of what we do is powerful and underpins our growth. Page 12 shows what we did this year in terms of acquisitions. Note that we say we did 93 new acquisitions, re-innovating acquisition methods and asset types. The point is that, you know, it's very easy to buy things by just listing the offer. It's much harder to buy things when you're trying to drive maximum value for the shareholders. And the market is currently very, very strong in Japanese real estate with lots of bids out there. And so we do think it's incredibly important to be innovative in the way that we buy assets for our value-add engine in ways that, that maximally contributes to the creation of shareholder value. So on the right-hand side, we have something we call, quote-unquote, traditional acquisitions. I mean, just to be very clear, the way we've always acquired assets is to try to be as smart as possible, but because the market is so strong, we felt like we had to do a lot in terms to drive more value to the acquisition process by doing the things. And so specifically, so 60% of the assets were bought in ways that are kind of relatively new for us, and 40% through our traditional approach. And specifically, the biggest thing that happened is with the launch, and I'll touch on this later, of Ichigo Owners, our platform that we do asset management services against physical real estate for Ichigo Owners clients. Much of the acquisition was done within that business. And that business is a high turnover business. So you use balance sheet, but you use it really, really efficiently because, in general, we would expect assets within that business to be a 6 and a maximum 12-month hold. We also did some M&A, in which we were able to buy assets embedded within a corporate structure that we think was very favorable prices to what we would have paid in the open market. We entered some new asset categories. We think we got very good prices in self-storage. That was actually part of the M&A with Centro and also in logistics. Logistics feels a little bit picked over in terms of very big assets. We're buying small logistics assets as Japanese package delivery firms, including the post office, find that the traditional kind of hub and spoke model where you have these large distribution centers because of both the labor shortage, particularly because of the labor shortage, is not an efficient way to deliver packages to consumers. And so they're developing out the spokes where you actually have small warehouses that are nearer to the customer. So we've gotten involved in that space because we think it's really pretty interesting. And in anything we do, you should get comfort on we make a hard decision about our ability to add value and to create returns above and beyond our cost of capital. Turning to page 13, in the next three slides we go through some characteristics of our business model. We can see on page 13, as we pointed out on the first page with respect to the summary, one of the key attributes of the model is that we have both stock and floor earnings. So stock earnings are just baked in. You begin the year knowing how much money you're going to make. It's contractually there. And the floor earnings are what you do as you know, a normal company. So 7-Eleven every day, they have floor earnings. They don't have kind of pre-baked, you know, 10 million customers are going to be coming in the next 6 months to our stores. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with flow. It's not as secure as stock. So we like to grow the stock as much as possible and have durable and diversified flow earnings around that. And so you can see we came down on total gross profit for fiscal year 18, so the results I'm talking about right now. In the current year that we're entering, we're expecting to go up again. And again, about half of our earnings at this point are stock and about half of them are flow and well above, overwhelmingly well above our fixed costs. You notice that there's a jump in our fixed costs from 5.3 billion to 6.8. Is just a change in accounting treatment. So in reality, if you want to compare apples to apples, 5.3, so 5.5311 becomes 6150 in terms of an actual year-on-year comparison. Page 14 demonstrates another element of the business model that we have of significant unrealized gains. They grow year after year. because of the value add that we do in our business. Now, to be clear, economic value add is not always does not always show up in your accounting statements, because the way that accounting works is you don't recognize a gain in a lower cost of market regime, which is the regime we operate in, until you sell the asset. So we do have a process where every year we have third-party appraisers look at our assets, and they provide a view on what they think are unrealized. Or the appraisal value is, and it's far above our current asset value. So as you can see, over the period from 2014 to 2018, we've grown our unrealized gains from $12.2 billion to $45.4 billion. That's a four-fold increase. If you turn to the next page, you can see the additional element, which is, in fact, these appraisal-based unrealized gains substantially underestimate the actual value creation that's going on. So year after year, we generate gross profits that are substantially above 2.2x, 1.86x. We had a typo on the materials we put up on the web, but if we fixed at this point, so the fiscal year 18 should be 4.4x. So we're delivering substantially above value creation, substantially above the appraisal value, which is a way of saying there's a huge stock of earnings that is sitting within the firm, and we continue to grow that over time. Page 16 shows our financing details. Yet again, we've managed to reduce our interest rate. At some, you know, part of this over this, you see this line going down from about 2% to 1% from the period of the last 4 years. Some of that was a decrease in interest rates. At this point, this is all about the firm being increasingly recognized as an outstanding credit. So we finance at about 1% for 10 years, which is a super great. We think a super great level, and therefore we obviously have a very strong incentive to use debt rather than equity, because our cost to show equity is going to be substantially higher than 1%. Turning to the full year forecast on page 18, we're forecasting OP up 20%, recurring profit up 15%, net income and EPS will come in slightly lower than that. We had some one-off gains last year, and we're being a little bit conservative in the way we're thinking about potential anything that could possibly show up at the bottom line. But plus 7% for that. We will be taking up our dividend again, 17% to 7 yen per share. We fully expect again to come in above our ROE target of 15%. So we're forecasting for 15.7%. On page 19 shows the segment breakdown. Looking at on the right-hand side at the operating profit forecast, we see asset management coming in at, again, another 14%. There's some one-offs that we're thinking that fall out of this. You'll note that on the bottom, this forecast includes no assumption of any public offerings for Ichigo Office, Ichigo Hotel, or Ichigo Green. Should there be public offerings, we would come in higher than these numbers. But the forecast is, we think, conservative and assuming nothing about the capital markets and where the capital markets will be over the next year. On value add, we're forecasting up 21% year on year. On clean energy, and this is primarily the effect of that huge power plant, by Tokyo standards, the largest power plant in the Tokyo region coming online. So you get a full year contribution from that. So we're forecasting up 80% there. Let me turn to what we've been doing in terms of growing the foundation, as we put it, for sustainable, building a foundation for sustainable growth. You know, we understand that the long run is a building upon the short run and the medium run. So you can't just always be talking about where we're going to be in 10 years without actually delivering significant value year in, year out. But we do run the firm on a very long-term basis. I won't go through it in detail on page 1M. There's a lot of words on the page. I'm happy to take any questions or feedback on it. But as you can see, we put out a midterm plan 2 years ago. This year will be the final year of that midterm plan. We have a number of initiatives we take very seriously, the disclosure we put out to our shareholders and investors, and we take very seriously the plan to grow value. And so we've got a number of things that we've been doing against that plan. Page 22. turning into two categories. One is, what are we doing in the core business to grow it? And following on that, what are we doing in terms of launching new businesses? We think growing stock earnings is important. You can see we bought a very large asset, Tradopia in Odaiba. The NOI growth there has been very substantial. That's helpful. There were some free rent incentives as we brought in new clients, so that NOI will actually grow over time, but there's enough lift. That's about $4 million a year that comes from that. The Shore Motor Plant that is talked about is going to be in full year operation, so there's an uplift that comes to about $9 million from that. On page 23, we get an example of what we do in value add. At the end of the day, we have value as a firm by creating value, and we create value for tenants. And in the case of hotels, a tenant would be hotel guests. And so what this is this particular case is the office REIT wanted to become a pure office REIT. It actually picked up some residential assets along the way. It had some service apartments. And as part of moving out of those more volatile categories into more durable, kind of core earnings sort of restructure, they wanted to get rid of a service apartment, which we agreed to buy from them. And so then it's like, what are we going to do with it? And so we think actually the best use for this was not as a service apartment. It was not originally as residential either. So it was residential, and we tried a service apartment approach, and now we've turned it on sale. And to give you some sense of economics, as a residence, this was generating about, and I'm going to use an ADR number because it's now a hotel, about 8,000 yen a day. As a service apartment, that increased to 10,000 yen. As a hotel, it's at 90,000. So we think this transition has been very, very important as a driver of value. And the reason why, you know, you get 19,000 yen a night is because there are swarms of people coming to Tokyo who want to stay in nice hotels, and this is a nice hotel. So this is also an example of our second hotel brand. We're moving the firm towards less asset-intensive businesses, and I'll talk about this later. We've got a brand that's a boutique hotel brand called The Knot, and this is a kind of friendly and convenient and amenable and good location brand called Mosby. Page 24 just shows you where we are and what we've done for the two REITs and the Solar Yieldco. I'll skip that, but since it's on the page, I'm happy to take anything on that. 25 shows what's happening in our clean energy business. We continue to increase and bring online our solar power plants. We've also got wind in the pipeline. At this point, the good news is everything in the pipeline we think comes online for wind. So we will be in the wind power business, we think, as of next year. Turning to page 26, this begins our discussion of new business entry. Look, we think there's ability to grow our existing businesses, and we think there's also the ability to grow by entering new businesses to the extent that they leverage the capabilities of the firm and create value for, frankly, for society. I mean, this is perhaps overly optimistic, but it is our view that companies that deserve to exist will, and that those that don't won't. And so our goal is to grow value for society and get and earn an honest return on doing so. We launched Ichigo Owners, which in March of last year. Repeat what that is. It is, as described at the top, it is real estate owner services. We have provided services, asset management services, and services for real estate investors through our REITs. And this is going outside of the REIT wrapper and directly acquiring real estate and selling it on to, and if the client wants it, providing ongoing asset management services to it. So in the first year, Ichigo Owners acquired about 20 billion yen of assets. It sold just 2 billion of them, so we have a little bit of a stock of real estate, which becomes our pipeline for transactions with Ichigo Owners clients. The plan for this year is for both acquisitions and sales to be about 20 billion yen. So, we expect this to be a high turnover business. We're not going to be keeping this stuff on the balance sheet for a long time. And the approach is to provide high-quality assets that are appropriate for long-term ownership and our asset management services. We continue to build relationships with new clients and with the advisors to those clients. So we have tax accountants, for example, lawyers, et cetera, who we are working with. Turning to page 27, describes the self-storage business, which we entered last year, as I said earlier, via M&A. Our goal is to be the number one in industry backed, and the brand is safe, secure, and clean. This is, just to be clear, this is all interior storage. It is all run kind of IoT, very low use of personnel from the central center. You have smart locks, you get in, it's safe, it's clean, it's secure. We have, in the last 2 years, taken a number of units from 1,900 to, including in development, the ones that are going forward. We've taken up to 3,600 rooms. We think there's a lot of growth that continues in this business. It does have synergies with Ichigo Owners, the business I just talked about, and also Ichigo Land, which is a new business we started to do kind of deep value add just in the last few months. It has synergies with Phil Company, which is a company that runs with Don, created a business relationship, which does kind of use of parking spaces. Effectively, this gives them another angle, and it's an exclusive with Ichigo for Ichigo for them to provide interesting things to do above parking spaces, which is a company that specializes in that. Page 28 touches on the alliance we set up with Fujitsu in the AI space. We've been developing over a couple of years a hotel revenue management system, which we expect to take online in September this year. This is a non-asset business. This is about optimizing pricing primarily for hotels. We're going to deploy it against our own hotels. We expect to deploy it against hotels in our REIT. If successful, we expect to take this externally. And so we will provide, you know, highly sophisticated using big data and some machine learning and some built-in intelligence in the hotel system in terms of optimal pricing for the hotel industry. And it's hopefully something that we can grow very substantially. Also in the hotel space, I mentioned earlier, we have two hotel brands. One of them is a boutique brand called The Knot. We launched The Knot Yokohama in December of last year. We were working towards the launch of The Knot. Probably it's going to be called The Knot Tokyo in Shinjuku. This is going to be a really, really good hotel. If you come to Japan, you should stay there. So this faces Shinjuku Central Park. It's designed, as you can see, in terms of the way you can see the kind of graphics on the page, to open up into the park. It is extraordinary, compelling value. The concept behind the boutique hotel entry is that this is a massive unmet need in Japan, that you have a very, very competitive budget hotel category, which is typically kind of $70, $80 U.S. per night. You have a reasonably well-served, I don't know if we want to call it luxury, but, you know, nice to luxury hotel market that's $300 and above a night, and they have this yawning gap between those two. We think there is an under-delivery for what guests want that costs, you know, for things that cost like $130, $150, $170 a night, and that's the market that we're entering. In the long run, if we can succeed with this, the goal would not merely to be to have, you know, the Knot as our own, as our brand on our own hotels, but to you know, go out in the world as a kind of ace hotel-like and have other owners provide the assets and will provide kind of the know-how in order to succeed with the hotel. So those are my prepared remarks. I'm very happy to take any and all questions or feedback. We're doing this one. We're not using an outsourced facility today, so we're going to do this ourselves. So anybody has anything in terms of a question or feedback, you can press star and then one, and we will take your call. So we're ready for that. Anybody who's interested, star and then one. At this point, we have nothing. I'm happy to end the call. It's fine. This is going to be one of those going once, going twice. Any and all, anybody has any questions or anything, I'm happy to take it. Otherwise, we'll bring the call to an end. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to work for all of you. I hope everybody has a good day and a good evening.